In today's episode, we travel to medieval Florence. Hello and welcome to the Medieval Grad Podcast, brought to you by medievalist.net. It's a podcast where we chat with graduate students and early career researchers to learn about the new trends and future of research in medieval studies. I'm Lucie Lemonnier, a medieval historian and the podcast host, and today I'm talking with Elizabeth Trischler, a PhD candidate in history at the University of Leeds in the UK. Hello, Elizabeth. Thank you very much for being here.
Hi, thank you so much for having me today.
So, Elizabeth, you're a fellow Canadian. What brought you to study in the UK?
Yeah, so I've actually been here on and off for the last kind of 6 years. I studied my year abroad at UCL in London from 2012 to 2013. So that was kind of my first experience of the UK. And one of the reasons why I wanted to come here was I wanted to do a study abroad year, but I wasn't super confident in my language skills. So I thought the UK would be a good spot. And also because of the medieval culture that's kind of so readily available here in the UK. So it's kind of on your doorstep. And I'm very interested in kind of built environments, as you'll know from the rest of this podcast. So the architecture that is still here, it's still in situ. So you're actually able to experience it here. Whereas, as you probably know, in Canada, you don't really have that medieval past so available to you. So that's kind of why I came here to study. And then I went back to Canada for my fourth year. But came back to the UK to do my master's in medieval studies at the University of Leeds. Took a few years off working in Canada, but now I'm back in the UK doing my PhD. So it's kind of been a back and forth between Canada and the UK.
So as you mentioned, your research focused on architecture. You're studying actually late medieval Italy, and your dissertation's title reads as follows: Urban Space and Its Practices in Shaping the Imagination of Dante in His Commedia. Dante Alighieri, born circa 1265, is a very famous writer from Tuscany. But some of us might not be as familiar with the character as you are, Elizabeth. So could you tell us, like, who he was?
Of course. So Dante Alighieri was a Florentine poet. He lived in Florence from when he was born to his exile in 1301. So he was born in 1265, as you've just said. And after his exile in 1301, he moved throughout Italy until his death in 1321. He's also known for establishing the use of vernacular in poetry. So rather than using Latin, he actually used the Italian, and he was kind of one of the first people to do that. And this also helped to establish the Italian that we now know today, so modern Italian. So he wrote many works, both in Florence and during his exile. His most famous work is the Divine Comedy, which we'll talk about extensively in a bit. And it uses the terza rima rhyming style of three line rhymes, basically. And this is also attributed to him, so he kind of invented this. He was not only a poet, but he also worked within the political landscape of Florence. So he took on different roles in the city council at various times. And this is actually what led to his exile. And his exile had a huge impact on him because at that time, one's identity was very much tied to the city in which you were baptized. So you were a citizen of that city after you were baptized there. So it was very much tied to that. He tried many times to return to Florence, but was unsuccessful in all of these. So during his exile, which is a bit complicated, I'll explain why he was exiled a little bit. He was exiled because of his allegiance to the White Guelphs. You don't need to know what those are. Basically, there were two parties and they were fighting against each other, and one would come into power and then the other one would be out of power, and they would kind of just crisscross constantly. And one of the things you could do to your opposition when you kicked them out of power was to basically exile them and confiscate all of their property so that hopefully they wouldn't be able to come and kick you out of power. So that's kind of what was going on at this time. His family life is also a bit complicated too. So he married a woman called Gemma Donati and had three children with her. But it's unclear if he ever saw Gemma after his exile, because she actually stayed in Florence. And two of his sons did write commentaries on his on his Divine Comedy, so he obviously was still close with them. Part of the reason why it's a bit complicated is that though he was married to this woman named Gemma, he never refers to her in his poetry. Instead, he refers to a woman called Beatrice, most commonly associated with by this woman named Beatrice Portinari. So he talks about her in his Vita Nuova, as well as in the Divine Comedy. So this is kind of a little bit awkward and strange that he doesn't refer to his wife. And he actually only met this woman, Beatrice, a few times because she died quite young. So Dante died himself in Ravenna on the 14th of September, 1321, and his body still rests there, though Florence has tried to bring him back multiple times, and there are great monuments to him in Florence, but his body actually rests in Ravenna. And this year, we're actually celebrating the 700th anniversary of his death, which will be happening on September 14th. And just to do a quick plug of my own work, I'll actually be presenting at the British Library on that day some of my research. So if you want to come along to that, that will be online as well.
I actually have just a 2 follow-up question, and it's really because of my own ignorance about Dante. So I'm wondering, what's his familial background? Was he a successful writer in his own lifetime?
Yeah, great. In terms of his wealth, he actually was not wealthy. So one of the reasons why he was able to rise to power is that in 1295, the statutes changed. And basically, if you were a part of a guild, then you were able to run for office. And before this, it was restricted to the nobles. So, but he actually was fairly unwealthy. And one of the reasons why he had to keep moving around when he was in exile is because he didn't actually have the money to support himself. So he kind of relied on patrons as he moved around. And just in terms of his fame during his lifetime, so Florence obviously didn't want him because he was exiled from there. So a lot of his writing was not popular in Florence, but it was popular throughout Italy. And a lot of his earlier works, like the Vita Nuova, were quite popular during that time. So he did have success, but it's not like, he was raking in money from that.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. So as you mentioned, one of his maybe most famous work is the Divina Commedia or Divine Comedy, which he wrote at the beginning of the 14th century and which he completed right before he died in 1321. What is the story of this masterpiece?
Yeah, so the story of the Commedia is fascinating. It's set in the year 1300, so Dante has not yet been exiled, and his main protagonist is himself, and we usually refer to as Dante the Pilgrim, just to kind of distinguish between the author and the protagonist. So it begins with Dante the Pilgrim at the age of 35, waking up in a dark wood where he is lost, and he's kind of barred from traveling because of there's these three animals, a leopard, a lion, and a she-wolf. So as he's kind of sitting there scared, he encounters this man called Virgil, who is the classical poet, who says he's been sent by Beatrice, that woman who he didn't marry.
She's back.
She is back. So Beatrice is in heaven. She's already died. So she sent various messengers to Virgil to get him to help Dante work his way through hell, purgatory, and paradise, because Dante has basically strayed from the correct path. He's no longer following God, and he needs her help. So most people are familiar with the Inferno, which is the first section. It traces Dante's journey through hell, where he meets a lot of different sinners, and some of which are still alive at this time. So it's quite, it caused quite a stir with his contemporaries, because he basically placed people in hell like popes that weren't necessarily dead yet or had just died. So it's quite an empowering thing, right? To say, oh, I know that you're, going to go to hell, or you'll be in purgatory or paradise. And then Purgatorio and Paradiso are less familiar to people. But actually at the time, people weren't really sure how it was structured or how it was laid out. And Dante kind of was at the forefront of thinking about that structure. And that's kind of how we think of purgatory now, as a mountain where you go through these different stages as you walk up it. And then finally, Paradiso describes Dante's journey through heaven, where he encounters the souls of the saved. And these kind of range in historical proximity, like the other ones as well. And it's often described as the most difficult because it is very theological. He uses a lot of metaphors, and it's quite tricky to describe. And actually, he warns the reader at one point that if this is too difficult for you, you should turn back because it's going to be a lot harder ahead. So that's kind of the general story that he follows in the Commedia. And just to say, the Divina part of Divina Commedia was actually coined by Boccaccio. Dante only refers to it as the Commedia, but Boccaccio called it the Divina Commedia, and that's how we kind of understand it still today.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, so in your research, you look at urban spaces and how they influenced Dante in the writing of the Commedia. Would you describe his urban environment? What did the city of Florence in Tuscany look like at the turn of the 13th and 14th century?
Yeah, great. So in some ways, the city was similar to what we see today, but many of the Renaissance buildings were not there during Dante's time. So if you think of the Duomo, the most kind of prolific image of Florence, it was under construction, but it was still very much a construction site. It would take until 1436, so well after Dante's death, to be completed, and kind of how we see it today. Like, none of the facade for which we know, the dome as well, was not built at that time. However, the city at this time was undergoing a huge building boom. During this time, many new buildings, both civic and religious, were built. Piazzae were opened up, the city walls were expanded, and the streets were also straightened. So these projects helped kind of reshape religious, civic, and political experience as they were integrated into practice, culture, and thought. So Dante and his contemporaries would have experienced a city that was constantly under construction. So in the 13th century, before the expansion began, sanitation was a huge problem, as well as criminal activity. So there were dark, narrow streets. Many peasant families lived in overflowing wooden houses, and established families lived in tower houses that were established in the 12th century. So one of the main catalysts for the expansion was the need to accommodate a new wave of migration from the city and kind of straighten out these streets and make it more of a livable city. So just to give some examples, there were 63 towers, 12 major gates, and several posterns built into the walls. They paved the thoroughfares, they widened and straightened the streets, they maintained canals, they built bridges of stone rather than wood, and houses out of stone as well. So there was a huge kind of change that was happening at this time. And not to mention the fact that when a different faction took office, many of the buildings were ripped down, especially their towers, in an attempt to kind of stop them from rising to power again.
So let's jump into the core of your work. How did Dante incorporate the city's architecture in his work?
Sure. So Dante uses a lot of architectural models within his poem. He invites the reader to compare otherworldly descriptions to earthly models, through metaphors and similes. And he also asks the reader to compare repeated architectural models within the poem itself. So Dante often subverts these architectural earthly models. For example, the city of Dis is an inverted city that plays with the opposition of city and nature. So instead of encountering a built environment of houses, squares, and churches, we find an infernal unbuilt landscape with a river of blood, a wood of suicides, and burning sands. So it's quite an opposition or an inversion. And this kind of subversion of the reader's expectations forces them to create comparisons and analyze that encountered space. He also kind of plays with the rituals and experiences that take place in those built environments, like processions or using the cloister for meditation, and various other kind of prayers and rituals that take place there. So my research kind of suggests ways in which these architectural models and the practices enacted within them were understood within their cultural context and employed by Dante. So I situate Dante's accounts of architecture within material and intellectual contexts of Florence. So in other words, I kind of look at what was happening in Florence, but then look at what was happening in the Divina Commedia in the sense that a lot of work so far has kind of done the opposite, where it looks at the commedia and then towards the material culture. So an example of my work kind of doing this is Dante refers to a cloister 8 times within the poem. So I look at and understand how cloisters were used and kind of functioned in the medieval period. So I look at, say, Santa Maria Novella, which had a cloister of the dead and was in Florence, and see how that space was used and its function as a meditative space. And then I see how Dante perhaps used this function of meditation or did not use that function within the poem. Or for example, the fact that many new churches were being consecrated because of the building boom. So I look at the procession, the consecration processions that happen at the end of Purgatorio in the earthly paradise, and kind of compare that to earthly consecration processions to see how that kind of conflicts or is in accordance with those processions.
So it's really fascinating, Elizabeth. And what does the text tell us about the way in which medieval people interacted with their environment?
Yeah, so firstly, one of the main things I argue in my thesis is that we're shaped by and influenced by the environment in which we are in. So in the medieval period, the shaping was imbued with religion, and therefore the architectural spaces and their parts had religious meaning. For example, the garden of the cloister was not just a garden, it represented the Garden of Eden as well as paradise itself. And because of this, medieval experience of space should be taken seriously. So Dante, he doesn't kind of simply draw a map of the places that he visits or the experiences that he has. He kind of takes the reader along with him on the journey, kind of revealing various things about the space at different times. And this kind of becomes a part of the penitential process of the poem. But this is also what I find quite fascinating, because an understanding of how medieval people interacted with their architectural environments is important in itself, but it can also kind of shed light on how we interact with space today. How does walking through a church on the same path as the pilgrim of the medieval past change your experience of that church, or what happens when you experience a procession through a church that kind of changes that space and transforms it? Or how does tracing the same path of the cloister every day kind of affect your experience of it? So I tend to ask myself, was the medieval experience that different from our own? So the more I study the medieval past, the more I feel out of touch with our current architectural trends. We now put up buildings simply kind of for practical or cost-effective reasons. Very little attention seems to be given to the experience of the viewer, and it saddens me that this has been lost. If architecture still does shape experience, which I believe it does, then what does the practical architecture do to us now? Does it shape our lives to become even more productive and more efficient? Is our environment impacting our creativity with its plain surfaces and efficient paths? And this kind of did become very pronounced for me during the pandemic as well, where we're all forced to stay within the confines of our own space and our own home. So one of my supervisors actually joked with me that I should have written the cloisters chapter while I was in isolation. Unfortunately, I had already done that. So all jokes aside, this experience did make me think about the space I inhabit a lot more and on a much smaller scale. So I've traveled to 30 different countries. I'm obviously away from my friends and family in Canada while I study abroad. So I typically thought of space on a more global scale, but the pandemic kind of really helped me to notice the streets that I'm walking and the space that I inhabit. And that's very similar to kind of Dante's encounters with space as well and the medieval experience, because a lot of the time it would take, you know, a very long time to move between cities, and a lot of your time would be spent in your particular city. So I kind of have got to experience that, not necessarily in a great way, but I did find that quite helpful for how I kind of think about the poem and how Dante is describing space. So yeah, the space that Dante encounters is a constructed space, and it's structured by the people he encounters, of course, those sinners or the saved, but it's also structured by the space that he inhabits. And I think that that's really important and really kind of came through for me as I kind of went through the pandemic and these ideas of community.
Yeah, it's great. And I really like the way you connected all this with the pandemic that we all experienced. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. So I have the last question I always ask to all my guests. It's a very short one. What advice would you give to a prospective graduate student who like to do a PhD maybe in medieval or Italian studies?
Yeah, I think my main piece of advice is to make sure that you really love your subject, because it can be a very long process, whether it's in North America or in the UK. I know it's a lot shorter in the UK, but it can be very long and kind of self-isolating at times. And it can be quite difficult in a good way, but also in bad ways as well. So I think just really ensuring that you love your subject is really kind of the best advice that I can give. Because if you don't love your subject at the beginning, you definitely won't love it at the end.
Yeah, because you're stuck with it for like 5 years.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be here.
That was Elizabeth Trischler, a PhD candidate at the University of Leeds. You can find out more about her work in the show notes, and we'll also make sure to link the Dante conference. Stay with us, because the episode isn't over yet. Let's bring in Peter Konieczny from medievalist.net. Hi, Peter. How are you doing? What did you think of the interview?